Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining the Facing MS-Related Changes with Confidence conference call. Your host for today is Jackie Carino. Ms. Carino, you may now begin.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. I'd like to introduce our guest speaker for tonight, Tom Mackin. Tom Mackin runs a leadership foundation, a leadership development and personal development company based in Jacksonville. Prior to starting this business, he spent more than 10 years at Stop at Nothing, a Jacksonville Beach-based management consulting company. Tom joined the board of directors for the North Florida chapter of the MS Society in 2006 and has worked with the Society's local and national leaders and staff to help them be the best they can be. So, Tom, take it away.
Okay. Thank you, Jackie, and thank you to everybody for inviting me to be with you on the call today. I wanted to start with a story, and the story helps answer the question of how I got involved with the MS Society. And it's a question I get fairly often because typically people recognize that someone has a very obvious personal connection when they get involved with the MS Society, and it wasn't very obvious in my case. And so when Jennifer Lee asked me to be on the board, Jennifer, as many of you know, is the chapter president down here in North Florida, I immediately said I would like to be on the board. And the story of the Lutz family, which is the photograph on the second page of your handout, helps explain that. Bob Lutz, who is the man holding the little baby, if you can see that clearly in your picture, was my best friend in high school and college. And I grew up in Philadelphia, and that's where Bob lives to this day. He and I had a lot of happy times and a lot of fun growing up. I won't go into all the details of that, but you can imagine what 16 through 22-year-old guys can do when they're having fun. But in any event, Bob and I were very close, and in his sophomore year of college, he spoke to me, and he was uncharacteristically sad. And I said, "Bob, what's wrong?" And he shared with me that his mom found out that day that she had multiple sclerosis. And I really didn't know what it was at all. And unfortunately, either did Bob or his family. And what they learned shortly after that is that it would change their life pretty dramatically. This was in the late 1970s, and Mrs. Lutz, Rita to her friends, had progressive MS, was diagnosed after she was having some difficulty walking and with a variety of motor skills. And as those of you who are familiar with progressive MS know, it wasn't long before there were very evident impacts on her ability to just live her daily life, raising a family and running a household. And as we watched the changes to Mrs. Lutz, it had a very big impact on Bob. Now, I have to give some background on Bob. Bob is, to this day, one of those guys, very loud, very fun-loving. Anytime you feel like you're with Bob, it's a party, and never really took life very seriously. And one of the amazing things was the transformation that came over him, not only some of the challenges it caused for him and his family, but also some of the growth it brought about. But I'll come back to that in a little bit. I wanted to start that story so that I made clear why I was so personally driven to want to get involved with the MS Society when several years later, Jennifer came to me and asked, would I like to be on the board? So let me shift to the next slide, if you have your handout in front of you. And this one describes some of the changes that are brought on by multiple sclerosis. And, you know, I'll apologize in advance to those of you who know this all so well, but there may be some of you on there who are very early in your experience with MS who may not be as aware of some of the impacts. But on that slide, we talk about the physical impacts. Now, those of you who are involved with progressive MS, you clearly know the impacts very quickly. For those of you who have relapsing remitting, as one of my other friends does, you may not notice on some days at all. And in the case of my friend, he didn't even realize he had MS until one day he woke up thinking he'd be getting ready for work and was unable to see. And he lost his vision for a few months at a time. And clearly that's one of the many varieties of symptoms that MS can cause. So also mentally, there can be an impact from MS. As those of you who have had this symptom know, or have had family members who have had this symptom know, it can slow down your thought process. It can make it more difficult to remember things. And it can certainly make you mentally fatigued. So that's one of the key impacts. And then, of course, emotionally and perhaps even spiritually, there are impacts. I've talked with people who at times begin to question their faith or their spiritual beliefs, or at least ask the universe why this is happening to them. So these impacts can be pretty dramatic in a lot of ways. I also wanted to call your attention to the impacts on family members and caregivers. So moving on to the next slide now, just as people who have MS are impacted, the family, the caregivers are impacted. Now, I've changed the order a little bit because I think the first impact is probably mental, people asking questions, well, what exactly is MS? It is a situation where sometimes MS has been in the family, so people are familiar with it, but very often people are unaware of even what multiple sclerosis means. And so mentally they have a lot of questions. And once they begin to see some of the impacts on their loved one, it can have an impact physically. They get tired. Now, the difficult part is that these impacts may be happening at different times. The person with MS might be having a day where they're doing pretty well and they feel okay emotionally and they're doing better than usual physically and may even feel pretty good in all the aspects that we've discussed. But it may be after several days where there's been a lot on the shoulders of the caregiver. And so the caregiver may be physically tired, which very often connects to emotional fatigue and irritability and those kinds of things. So those are changes that can impact both people with MS, both caregivers. And again, many of these things you know all too well. But I just wanted to go over those and talk about for a minute why that change to our lives, obviously no one asks to have MS, but why that change as well as any other change is so uncomfortable. So for a moment here, I'm going to ask you to see if you have a pen handy, a pencil handy, and a piece of paper, and I'll give you a minute to collect those items. And now that you've done that, you can follow along with the next slide if you'd like, where it says exercise, why change is uncomfortable. And what I'll ask you to do is take that pen or take that pencil and sign your name on that piece of paper. Imagine you're endorsing a check that you want it to be honored at the bank. And after you sign your name, let me ask you how that feels. Now, obviously, that's a rhetorical question. But usually, when I ask people this question in person, they think I'm crazy. I get very interesting looks from people. You're asking me to sign my name and then asking me how I feel. But let me explain through part two of the exercise why I ask you how you feel. The second part of this exercise, and again, you may see this on the next slide if you like, move the pen or pencil into your opposite hand and sign your name again. Again, sign your name as if you're endorsing a check and you want it to get honored at the bank. Now, I can't hear any of you because we've muted the lines, but I can imagine the answers I would get to how does that feel. Most often I hear things like awkward, uncomfortable, or even outright refusal to sign their name for, anxiety that it won't be recognizable or that I just don't want to do it because I'm not comfortable with it. And that leads us to the next point, which is that change takes us out of our comfort zone. And again, we're on the next slide, so feel free to move forward if you like. Why is it that we don't want to move out of comfort zones? It's for the very reason that you just found after doing the exercise, that when we do something that we're not accustomed to doing, whether it's signing our name with our opposite hand or whether it's having to limit some of our normal daily activities because of MS, we feel very awkward about that. And we need a period of time to adapt to the change. Now, with most changes, whether it's having MS in your life or whether it's breaking a hand, as a friend of mine has done and had to write with their opposite hand, it takes time, and it's both normal and necessary for the time and the growth to begin to adapt to the change. Now, one of the points that I want to make about what multiple sclerosis does, and this takes us back to the story I shared with you about the Lutz family, is that there's no question that MS takes a lot of things away from us, and it frustrates us. But it can also lead to learning and growth, and that was very much the case in the situation with the Lutz family. My friend Bob began developing more compassion. He began getting involved with his local chapter of the MS Society, which happened to be the Delaware Valley chapter up in the Philadelphia area. And he began to become overall a much more compassionate human being, a much more caring human being. Not that he wasn't already a great guy, and one of the reasons he was my friend, but I saw him as a person deepening and growing as he helped his mom and helped himself come to terms with having multiple sclerosis in their family. Now, when we adapt to any change, and here obviously we're talking about changes that occur as a result of MS, there is a cycle that's involved, and that cycle is very natural, and it repeats itself when we go through any type of significant change. Now, the first stage of change we refer to as denial. So we may say things with relation to MS like, this won't change my life, or I or my loved one can do everything that they've always done. Things are not going to change. They'll still be able to pick up the kids from school. They'll still be able to hold a full-time job. They'll still be able to complete all the duties at home that they always have. And whether it's the person with MS or the caregiver, it may take a while to come to terms with the fact that life is changing. Now, what makes it even more difficult in the case of relapsing remitting MS is at times the person with MS may be able to do all the things that they did prior to MS, and they might feel really good on certain days. But, of course, when there is an exacerbation, those things are not so easy to us. You know, many people I know, even with relapsing remitting, even when they're feeling pretty good, they have the extra sensitivity to heat and to fatigue and those kinds of things. Now, that leads us into the next phase of change. Once we can no longer deny that our life is changing, this very often takes people into their emotions. So what are some of the forms that these emotions take? Very frequently, anger. People upset and mad that this disease has picked them, of all the people in the world, or picked their loved one, of all the people in the world, to impact. There may be sadness, and grief over the way that life is changing. Despair or helplessness, fear. What does this mean? What does having MS in my life or in my family mean to me? Frustration with the inability to do some of the things you've done in the past or that your loved one has done in the past. Helplessness. These are just some of the emotions, and I'm sure many of you listening to me tonight have experienced some, if not all, of these emotions. Now, one of the real challenging things about emotions is that we're not able to think through emotions, and that's what a lot of us do. Now, being a man, I can point the finger to myself on this one. You know, many times as men, we try to intellectually look at things and just figure out what tool we need to fix it. And something like an emotion is not something that we can just fix intellectually or logically or with the right tool. To give an example of what I'm talking about here, probably many of you have experienced a day that was just completely frustrating. And you go home to a family member or a loved one or a friend, and all you want to do is vent to them, to explain to them what the day was like. Now, typically when we do that, we get one of two responses. We get somebody who patiently listens, and they understand us, and we feel better after we've shared that with them. But just as often, if not more often, we'll share with someone who says, well, you should have said this or done this, and we feel even more frustrated when that happens. So that's an example of what I mean by trying to work through an emotion intellectually or logically. It just follows a different dynamic. In fact, emotions are energy in motion. It's energy that moves through our body, and it's looking for a natural way to get expressed. Now, there are a number of healthy ways to release emotions, and I've got some of them listed on the slide there that's headed Adapting to MS-Related Change, which is the second of the slides with that heading. And these include physical exercise, if you're able to do exercise, talking with a trusted friend, as we mentioned, or a family member, even crying, breathing exercises, all can be very useful in releasing the emotions that build up, whether, again, they're anger, sadness, stress. Another expression that can be very helpful is writing in a journal, just writing your thoughts and feelings out, and that can be very useful. Now, some people are not able to come to terms with their emotions. They get stuck in their emotions, and this is moving to the next slide now. Unless we find a healthy way to work through them, and I'm emphasizing a healthy way, because there are some people who find unhealthy ways to deal with their emotion. Examples you can think of is just burying them, swallowing the emotions. And some people do literally swallow things, drink or food, to deal with the emotion. They overeat or they overdrink or they just escape into watching too much television or any number of ways that are just band-aids to dealing with the emotion. They actually numb it on the short term, but they make the emotion worse in the long term because people begin to feel less energy as they run away from the emotions. The emotions will tap our energy sources unless we express them. So let's say we are able to come to terms with our emotions. The next phase of change is acceptance. Acceptance means that we recognize this is part of the reality of our life now. And MS is something that we're going to need to find a way to deal with, either if it's me who has MS or if it's a family member. How can we work with this real-life situation called MS that we've been dealt? Now, when we accept and we no longer fight the emotions that are involved with it, we naturally begin to do things like asking questions. So we might contact our local chapter and ask, what are our options? What are the medications? And many of you, I know, have been through this. Acceptance is a very healthy phase, even though we may have what I call good days and bad days, where we may jump back into the emotional phase. And we'll have a series of mini changes that we go through as we go through the different phases of MS and how MS impacts us. So as we go through accepting MS in our lives, most people begin to look forward and begin to find hope that they can deal with this condition. They can begin to come to terms with the changes it might mean to their daily schedule, to their ability to work, exercise, complete family duties, whatever the case might be. Now, the last stage of change that leads us back into a new change very typically is called commitment. Commitment is when we take action and implement solutions. Now, remember, when we're in acceptance, we're really just asking questions. We're really just seeking information. And we may, again, be moving back and forth between being emotional and moving into acceptance. Commitment is when we really get things done. We might take actions such as, you know, using health-related devices that help us move forward. Some of us need assistance with walking. Some of us need to change our schedules. Whatever it is, when we take action, we begin to feel more empowered. Now, invariably, if you look at the next slide, when we begin to feel that renewed confidence and self-esteem for having overcome the initial challenges of MS, life typically deals us another change. And knowledge of this cycle that will initially go through denial, oh, things are not going to change, I figured out how to live with MS, and now maybe here comes another exacerbation, or maybe now here comes some other situation in our life that causes us to change further. If we're not aware, we may go right back into denial and not deal with the change. What's very helpful to know about the way the cycle of change works is when we are aware of how it works, we have better ability to communicate with people. We might say, for example, as I do on the first day back after a vacation, I'm still in denial. I'll deal with all the work that I have to do tomorrow. When we know we're in denial, we can have fun with ourselves and realize, okay, I've got to go get on with this very soon. Perhaps today is not the day I'm ready, and tomorrow will be the day. Now, unless we want to swallow our emotions, we eventually do have to face up to the change and go through the cycle again. So, what are some tips for making these changes successfully? First, again, on the next slide, the first one that says tips for making change successfully. Acknowledge that changes impact the person with MS and caregivers very often at different times, as I mentioned earlier. And if we are experiencing emotion personally, to share with people through that awareness, I'm feeling very sad about this today, or I'm angry, or I'm upset about it. When we can express what emotion we're feeling, people typically give us more space, more room, and try and help with the emotion where they can. Different people need different things. Some of us need to be left alone to work through our emotions. Others of us may need to talk it through or talk it out. The other tip is to acknowledge that you will all go through some version of the change cycle. Some of us get through denial more quickly. Others of us, it takes a little bit longer. Some of us need different things to cycle through the emotions, as I've talked about. But when we can recognize when we're in denial or when we're feeling an emotion, we can allow those emotions to come and find healthy ways that we talked about earlier to express them. One of the best outlets for emotions that I found is through physical exercise. Now, many of you are not able to do the traditional types of physical exercise, such as taking long walks or running or lifting weights or going to the gym. But if you can do modified physical exercises, some of us I know in the North Florida chapter are aware of modified aerobics classes or swimming exercises that can be done, particularly at this time of year. Swimming, if that's something that's available to you, is a very useful exercise. But whatever it is for you, in consultation with your health professionals, can be a very healthy way to deal with the frustrations and other emotions that come along with MS. Other tips. Allowing yourself to learn new ways to live with MS, talking with people, and I'm very impressed by the numbers of people that Jackie tells me join these calls, because that means that you're seeking out new ways to deal with MS, and you're probably, like me, being very excited by some of the new developments in medications that are coming across. And fingers crossed, we're very hopeful that there will be, some oral medications available to us very soon. If you don't know much about that, contact your local chapter and you can learn more about that. But even those changes will cause us to go through a curve, and when we hear about new medications, sometimes we get overly optimistic and, we begin to think that life is going to change more dramatically than it will, which can be in some ways another form of denial. But what is the final tip that I'll share with you regarding making change successfully, commit to something positive, some future direction, goal, vision that you have for yourself that makes a difference for you, your family, or your community. Many people who have MS have been very empowered by getting involved and helping others who have MS. I was very proud that one of the people who joined me this past year on our advocacy trip to Washington, D.C., one of the people who went with us, she has MS, and I was amazed. I mean, I didn't know she has MS, and I know some of you on this call hear that all the time and maybe even find it frustrating. But I was very amazed by how part of her mission is to share information and to help others who have MS. Now, I mentioned the last bullet on that slide that there's a postscript on the Lutz family. I'm going to hold on to that for a moment because I've been talking about change throughout, and I want to refer to the next to the last slide that's headed recommended reading. And this is one of the most powerful books I've ever read on change. It's called Switch. It was just published late 09 or early 2010. I'm not exactly sure what the date was, but within the last six to eight months. And the authors of Switch are Dan and Chip Heath. And what they say is that when we're dealing with personal and organizational change, there are three main things to keep in mind, whether that change is for business or whether it's in our personal lives. The first thing is that change impacts the intellectual side of us. In other words, our brains, what the Heaths call our rider, R-I-D-E-R, need to know clearly what is the path to successfully making this change. What is it that I need to do? And that needs to make logical sense to us. Now, there's also a side of us called the emotional side, as I've been talking about, or as the Heaths refer to it, the elephant of our brain. This is the emotional side of our brain. The reason they use the image of the rider and the elephant, the rider, our logical brain, tells us what to do and tries to direct us. But the emotions are so powerful in humans that they're like the elephant. And if the elephant doesn't want to move, it doesn't matter what the rider does. The elephant ain't moving. So the elephant is the part of us that would rather eat the bowl of ice cream than the vegetables or fruit. The elephant side of us is also the passionate side of us that gets engaged in things, that gives us a desire to want to live the fullest life we can live for ourselves, for our families, for our loved ones. And so recognizing that change is not just about logic, but it's also about emotions is a point I've made several times. But this book is one that I think has powerful examples and guidance for how to deal with that change if you'd like to learn or read more. Now, here's my postscript on the Lutz family. My friend Bob Lutz, who I mentioned we went through high school and college together, got very involved with his local chapter, the MS Society. And one of the positive benefits out of his mom suffering for many years before she passed away with MS was that over the years, Bob has raised more than $750,000 for the Delaware Valley chapter of the MS Society. He's done this by sponsoring golf tournaments, by having fundraisers. He's been extremely creative, even doing things like, you know, coming up with contests around football games to help raise money for the MS Society. On top of that, I think I can fairly say, and Bob and I have talked about this, that the experience that his mom faced and that his whole family faced of Mrs. Lutz having MS changed his life for the better. He was always a giving person, but now he supports many nonprofit organizations. He still runs golf tournaments to support nonprofit causes and really sees MS as a turning point in raising his social awareness and confidence. So we are right at about the 30-minute mark. I wanted to make sure that there was plenty of time for questions. So, operator, if you're available, if you can open it up for questions at this point, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press the number one key. Our first question comes from Rita. Rita, go ahead.
Hello. I enjoyed the conference. You brought us a lot of information that I really didn't understand. Emotionally, I pushed everybody away.
Operator, I'm not able to hear the question. Is it possible it can be repeated?
One moment. I believe Rita fell out of queue. I'm going to go on to the next question. And if Rita, if you could press the number one key again. Our next question comes from Janie. Janie, go ahead.
Yes. I was just diagnosed in 2009 with MS. My gait, and I was trouble walking. I was working at the time. I was wondering, they asked when I went to Atlanta. When I went, the doctor asked, did any of my family members have it? None of my family members has it. Does it mean MS has to be someone in your family have it before you have it?
No, it does not. And that's an excellent question to repeat that for those who may not have heard it. Does someone in your family need to have MS before you contract it? Unfortunately, and I want to preface this by saying I'm not a doctor, I'm not an expert in medical diagnoses, so I encourage you to also validate anything I say with your healthcare professionals, but we've seen instances for a variety of causes that may drive MS. Now, there are some very common links between MS and things like ancestry. And by ancestry, I mean more having to do with those of us who have come from families who lived in Northern Europe tend to have a higher incidence of having the disease. Women, for some reason, tend to have a higher incidence of contracting MS. Now, as I think I mentioned in the call, there are some people who have a family history of it, but that is not necessarily the case in every instance. So there are probably genetic markers, and very quickly I'd be getting into areas that I just don't have enough expertise on. But what I mean by genetic markers, there may be some things in the way our genes are configured that could increase the chance that we would be susceptible to multiple sclerosis. But let me share with you one example that would indicate why we do not believe that's always the case. I've actually met some people who were in the military, and one man in particular who was involved in the first Iraq War, the first Gulf War, and was part of a platoon that was fighting the terrible oil fires that were set over in Kuwait and Iraq. And because there is such a high instance of MS or incidence of MS among those people who served in the military at that time, particularly those who were exposed to those fires, and particularly since there was a dramatic increase in the incidence of MS among Kuwaitis in that part of the country, we think that there are other factors that are driving MS. Unfortunately, we just don't understand enough about it. One of the things I can share with you that's good news is there's a lot of work being done to have more studies of the link between those who served in the military and MS, so that hopefully that can unlock some valuable information to understand why any of us contract MS. So hopefully, Janie, that gives you some useful information. It may not answer all of your questions, so I would refer you, A, to your healthcare professionals, B, back to your local chapter, if I wasn't able to give you a complete enough answer.
Our next question comes from Karen. Karen, go ahead.
Hi, my name is Karen. I was just wondering, well, not really wondering, just thinking about what the things that's been going through with my life. I was diagnosed with MS in 2007, and now I'm, you know, dependent on a wheelchair and can't really walk. You know, I can walk, you know, from a wheelchair to the, well, the chair to the wheelchair, but trying to get used to the change of, you know, being an independent person doing things for yourself, and then all of a sudden, you know, it just changes on you. You got to depend on someone else. And I understand that's very hard to do. I'm still, I still can't grasp that I have that, you know, at this time. But, you know, like you said, you go in denial sometime, but, you know, I think now that I'm listening to everyone else is, you know, everybody has different MS. My MS is mostly with my walking, and it's just very hard to accept, you know, when you, well, I'll be 41 in a couple of weeks, but, you know, I even heard about the, you know, the little kids that have MS, you know, how do they deal with it? How do their parents deal with it? You know, and young people that are out, you know, doing what young people do, how do you, I mean, it's a very hard place to deal with it, but I guess, you know, for us, the people who have MS, I mean, what choice do we have but to accept it, you know?
I think you're exactly right. I appreciate your acknowledgement of that, because there is no question that MS is a very difficult thing to accept. And I think one of the biggest challenges, and it's why I spent as much time on it on the call as I did, is dealing with the emotion of it. And I think you touched on something that was so important, which is the impact on our independence. And when we need to rely on other people, there's not only the physical change, but it's very important to recognize the emotional change. Now, think about people who don't have MS, and many of you have experienced parents getting older, or even yourselves getting older. And one of the things that people, as they get older, one of the things that they fight to hold on to as long as they can is independence, whether that be driving, whether that's going to the store for themselves, whether that's living independently. I mean, these are human issues. These are not just MS issues. Now, what MS does is it causes us to face those issues of independence much earlier in our life than we would like to. And so the recommendation I would make is see what's happening for yourself first emotionally, and do what you can to deal with those emotions. So what I mean by deal with them is write them down. Do what you need to do that feels natural to express that emotion. And I think a lot of times in life, you know, we're discouraged from, if there's a day where we feel like crying about it because we're sad, that actually may be the healthiest thing that you can do. Now, I don't want to mislead and say that, you know, you want to go about your life every day being sad and crying. What I'm talking about is expressing that emotion, because emotions are time-based. And when we can express the emotion that I'm feeling today, I don't have to deal with that same one tomorrow. What happens is we let it build up, or we can let it build up, and it can feel overwhelming when a lot of that sadness that we haven't dealt with comes over us, or maybe frustration or anger. So I can't emphasize enough to talk with people who have been through MS, talk with your healthcare professionals about the emotional side of MS in addition to the physical side, in addition to some of the impacts it has on our memory, intellectually, because emotions are just a different animal. And if we don't contend with them, they may be the thing that becomes the most difficult part of having MS. So I really appreciate your question about how you deal with it. And that's the strongest recommendation I would make. Talk with people who will listen and be understanding.
Our next question comes from Janine. Janine, go ahead.
Yes. I was told that I have this MS. I was told this about 2.5 years ago. At the time I was told that I had this MS, I had forgot everything in my past. And I read all the time about MS patients And they said that only 10% of MS patients lose everything in their past. Now, I am a medical assistant. And when I'm able to work again, I want to work with MS patients. I think that that would help me since I had lost, you know, everything in my past. I mean, I remember everything now, but that, you know, that's what broke my heart so bad, because I had forgot everything in my past, you know, everything. And I'm happy with myself because I do remember everything now. And so I want to work with other MS patients. With me being a medical assistant, that's what I want to do, is work with, you know, other MS patients. Thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you for sharing that. And I, you know, commend you for wanting to do that. And, you know, as I mentioned with the lady who accompanied me to Washington, D.C. this year, I think that can be extremely rewarding to help make a difference for other people who are facing MS. And as Janine mentioned, you know, it may impact memory as it did for her. One of my friends, I mentioned that he woke up unable to see one day. And if you can help someone else deal with the reality that comes into someone's life as they deal with MS, that can be extremely rewarding. And very often, if you've had this experience, when you're giving, you very often get back every bit as much, if not more. And so, you know, I applaud you, Janine, for wanting to go back to work and help others who've been through a difficult, you know, symptom of MS like you have. Thank you for sharing that.
Our next question comes from Margaret. Margaret, go ahead.
Yes, I have a question in regards to family communication. And I have a daughter who lives within very close proximity of where I live, and she just refuses to speak with me, talk with me. She won't let me see my grandchildren when I call her and I leave a message. You know, she just totally ignores me. You know, she will talk indirectly to an older sibling of mine and, you know, maybe tell him, well, I'm never going to take care of my mom or something, but that's not what I'm expecting. I'm not expecting her to take care of me. I just want to, you know, be able to have a good communication with her. And I know that MS can be disruptive, so I just wanted to have some of your thoughts. I am receiving therapy for help and support with my relapse and remitting MS, so I just wondered if you could give me some helpful tips.
Yeah, Margaret, that's a really challenging situation that you have, and obviously I'm sure there are a lot of things that I'm not aware of that, you know, have impacted, you know, the communication getting to the point where it is. You know, I'd very much welcome an opportunity to talk further with you about it, but the basic comments that I would make is seeing if you can increase your understanding of, you know, what makes it the case that your daughter does not want to speak with you. If you can begin to understand a little bit more about that, maybe you have an opportunity to address the situation. I suggest very cautiously speaking with your sibling about it to see if you can get any information. And the reason I'm so cautious about that is, very often in families, there's a dynamic that's referred to as triangles. And what triangles are when you get three people playing roles that lead to people talking about the party who's not involved in the conversation right now and not necessarily saying things that they would say if that person was involved in the conversation. So I'm very, very cautious about that. But if you can, in a very objective way and in a way to just gather more information, see if your sibling can share anything with you about why your daughter is not willing to speak with you or, you know, let you see your grandchildren, that may give you some information. Now, the thing that's so difficult about this is that, you know, family is such an emotional thing to start with, and it's very difficult to be objective about our own family. The other advice that I would have is speaking to, you know, your healthcare professionals. They no doubt have come up across situations where, you know, family challenges come up, such as the one you have with your daughter, and they may be able to give you advice on this. But, you know, there are basic communication principles, but I understood pretty clearly from what you said, you're not even able to speak directly with your daughter. I think your best options are speaking with the sibling and seeing if they can share anything more with you without getting them in the middle. And then the other option would be speaking to your healthcare professional to see if they have advice based on situations they've seen with other patients. So I'd like to be of more help, and I'd invite you to contact your chapter and see if there's a way I might be able to share more with you at another time about communication dynamics. But clearly, because it is, I'm sure, a very involved situation, I would need to know more to really give you good advice.
Our next question comes from London. London, go ahead.
My question is, how do you deal with the difficulties actually being around certain people and actually, you know, going about your day and, you know, doing what it is that you have to do? You know, I look at people so different now that I've been diagnosed with it. You know, my friends make fun of the way I walk, or, you know, I get tired very easily. And I just want to know, how do you deal with the different emotions and mood swings on a daily basis?
I think that's an excellent question. And, you know, I just have to be honest, as a human being, it's sad to me when people make fun of things like that. But it's not very different from, you know, other situations that lead to people making fun of others and things like that. And while we all, you know, want to be lighthearted about things, it's no question that it's hurtful. Having said that, I think the most important thing we can all do, whether it's emotions related to MS or anything else, is take responsibility for our own emotions. Now, the reason I say this is there may be some people who hear a comment where someone makes fun of the way they walk or something similar to that, and that person smiles or laughs, and then other people or other times, if it's just the wrong day, it may really anger us or sadden us or frustrate us. So what I would recommend is recognize that there are different emotions that different people feel depending on the situation they're going through. Now, I just want to acknowledge that I think the majority of people would be upset, you know, when people make fun. But I think if we can come to terms with what's the emotion I'm feeling and deal with that emotion, whether it's talking with someone who will understand and not be, you know, derogatory or make fun. And most of us really find a lot of value in those people who are trusted. Now, if you're not able to find someone either among your friends or family who have that ability to listen and really understand, then I would recommend, you know, calling someone at your local chapter and explaining what you're running into and see if they can at least express to you that they understand what you're going through and that they've seen other times when people have had to go through this. You know, I mentioned that my friend, His mother went through an experience with progressive MS where she walked with a limp and then wasn't able to walk at all, and then it started impacting her speech. And as those of you who have progressive MS know, I mean, the impact can be pretty dramatic fairly quickly. And so what I would recommend is to first recognize what are you feeling emotionally as people make those comments or make fun or whatever it is they do. And when you can clearly identify your own emotion, to take responsibility for that emotion. And if you don't have a good outlet, find one either through, you know, someone at your chapter, or through the doctor's office that you go for treatment, and see if once you feel understood and can identify the emotions that you're going through, how do I deal with that emotion? You know, and some of us who are able to exercise can express emotion through exercise, express it through talking, express it through prayer. Some of us really respond to prayer. But whatever it is that gives us some ability to move that emotion through us, it's a very natural thing to have that emotion expressed. What's less healthy is when that emotion just gets all bottled up inside us and has nowhere to go, because what it does is it drains our energy, which is already challenged from having to contend with MS.
Our next question comes from Rita. Rita, go ahead.
Hello. I think I'm in the same boat, I think, as Margaret, and about the daughter not wanting to talk to her and hold grandchildren back from her. Mm-hmm. My daughter is sick. Tomorrow will be 16 years old. She's 6 months pregnant. Basically, she was in so much legal trouble with the police. I go, told her father, you need to come get her. I can't take it anymore. Because she was draining me, you know, what I got. And now I'm getting cut off on information on when the baby's going to be and what. So I'm sad that out of anger, I pushed her away.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, you know, she wasn't cleaning house for me or nothing. She was homeschooled. She has no reason. You know, she just felt like she did so much, which she didn't. Now I am putting my energy into laying a linoleum tile floor. You know, I got the baby room. It's set in pink, and I'm busy. You know, I try to stay busy and occupied. But I know that it's, you know, I feel like I won't see that kid till 6 months old.
Mm.
It's like I pushed her away. My sister had it full blown. She's in the nursing home. I mean, on diapers and on feeding tubes, somewhat like Karishavo. All she can do is blink. I don't go see her. I told her goodbye 5 years ago. I asked God to go ahead and take her. So, evidently, it does run in my family.
Yeah, and then, you know, I'm sorry for those different challenges, and it does sound like in your family it is something that, you know, there's multiple occurrences of, and first thing I say is, you know, I'm sorry for the challenges that you're going through, and, you know, my heart goes out to you for those things that you're running into. There are a couple things that I do want to comment on. One sounds like you have some anger at yourself for potentially pushing your daughter away, and the other one is clearly some emotion that you have towards your daughter with regard to, you know, keeping you informed about, you know, the upcoming birth of her baby and those kinds of things, as well as emotion, you know, about your own parent. So let me comment first on the feeling you may have related to pushing your daughter away. And this would apply whether you had MS or not, but one of the most destructive emotions that we have is self-blame or self-anger. And that in and of itself can make it very hard to have the energy that we need for fighting MS, for continuing to live the kind of life that we want to live. And so if you can come to terms with the emotion you feel and recognize that at the time you were doing the best you could, you were doing what you could based on what you knew to do what was best for yourself, for your daughter, for everyone involved, that may allow you to let go of some of the emotion you feel toward yourself. As far as the emotion that you might have in the situation with your daughter. Again, not knowing all the circumstances going on in your family, it's very difficult. It might be important for you to find someone who is going to be very objective but sensitive, who you can talk to. And I mean this for a particular reason. When I say sensitive but objective, what I mean is someone who's going to listen but not necessarily take sides. Someone who's not necessarily going to say that you did anything wrong or your daughter did anything wrong, but just to understand the situation. And understanding the situation doesn't mean making the situation worse by maybe getting you more riled up or by saying that you or your daughter or anyone else did anything wrong. You know, very often we need someone to just hear us. And when we feel heard, we then have an opportunity to move past the feelings that we're having and start to get on with our lives and figure out, okay, this is the way it is right now. You know, my daughter doesn't want to speak to me. I'm concerned that I may not get to speak to my grandchild or meet my grandchild for a period of time. What is it that I can do? It's difficult to deal with the actions you might have available to you if you're caught up in the emotion. So what I would recommend is deal with the emotion you feel towards yourself. See who you can talk to who can understand the way you feel about your daughter. And if you can get that kind of support and help, I think that will take you a long way to beginning to accept the situation and figure out what you can do next.
Our next question comes from Tracy. Tracy, go ahead.
Thank you. Tom, I was diagnosed in 88. So it's been a long time. And I'm 44 years old now, and I just want to make a comment about the change cycle and everything. I have relapsing remitting, and I went several years with nothing happening. In 2006, I had the wicked attack that stuck me in bed for 4 months. And it came to the point where I had to seek counseling outside to deal with just my emotions. Like, I knew about denial and I knew about acceptance and everything. But when I went to counseling and talked to my counselor then, it was like... he was very adamant about what do you want to do? And I said, well, I think it's very important that I go to these meetings, MS meetings, and I'm there for the new people. Because when I first went to an MS meeting, everybody's in a wheelchair. I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, this is what my future is. And I said, I need to be there so people see that everybody's in a wheelchair, no matter how far along we are. But it's that relapsing, remitting, up and down. You go, oh, I think I'm through this. I've accepted it. Oh, no. It's like a whole new ball game every time. And I really liked your cycle slide that, you know, showed, oops, you get to this point, now you're going to go through it again. And I just want to say thank you very much for sharing that, you know, having that fourth C. And really, that's all I have to say.
Well, thank you, Tracy, and I appreciate your courage. I mean, you know, one of the things that, you know, just doing some simple math, you were in your early 20s when you were diagnosed with MS, and, you know, I respect your courage, and I think the point that you made that is so powerful, a couple things really, is one is if you feel like emotionally it's more than you can handle, then seeking counseling is absolutely the right thing. And counseling is an easy thing to say, but I know there's different financial situations. Again, your local chapter of the MS Society, your healthcare professionals are usually good sources of telling you where you can find counseling regardless of your financial situation. And I very much encourage people, if you feel at the point that you're overwhelmed, you're concerned about, you know, your emotional safety or any other form of safety, please, you know, contact the people who are professionals in this field. I think the second really critical point that you made, and I know we're right up at time here, is you know, doing what you can to move to the next phase of your life. And it looks like one of the ways that you've decided to do it is to attend the meetings so that you can help people who are just coming to terms with MS. And I just have a tremendous amount of respect for you, Tracy, for giving to other people in that way. And many of you who have talked about that on the call or at other times wanting to give back, thank you so much for doing that. It's people like you who are giving people hope, giving people ideas for how they can best deal with having MS. And I appreciate everyone listening. And at this point, I'll just turn things back to the operator and Jackie just to see if there are other questions. I'm happy to stay if there are. But I also recognize that people expected the call to end within an hour.
Sir, there are three more questions in queue.
And I'm happy to take them as long as, you know, we're able to do that.
Yes, sir, that's no problem. Our next question comes from Karen. Karen, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about, I'm actually an MS patient. I've had it for 19 years, and I have gone through all of those steps of denial and acceptance and sadness and all the other emotions that come with it. And I've actually, lack of a better thing to say, I'm actually at a good point with my MS. I'm okay with it now. I don't have a lot of problems with it. I have problems with my walking, but I deal with it, and I get over it, and I just persevere on. But my question is, I have a wonderful husband who is very much a caregiver, and I'm wondering what I can do as an MS patient to alleviate some of the overwhelmed emotions that he feels literally on a day-to-day basis. I mean, he's the breadwinner of the family, so he, you know, works very hard, and he comes home, and then he has to help me with things. And I know that I'm pretty able to do a lot of things that he helps me with, but I just maybe sometimes feel like maybe I do take advantage of him. Are there things that I can do to help him to be a better caregiver, be better emotionally, and not feel so overwhelmed?
Karen, you bring up a point that very often comes up, and Jackie, I'm sure, could attest to this too, having done couples workshops and also having done presentations where caregivers and people who have MS are there. This is a very common situation, and what makes this even more challenging, and clearly I don't know your husband, but men tend to have a little bit more difficulty admitting when they feel overwhelmed, first of all, you know, because the way many of us as men are raised is, you know, no problem, I'll deal with it, you know, you just suck it up and you do it, and many of us are taught that from a very early age. So I just want to be very realistic saying that there's, you know, a chance that you might be dealing with something that's a very ingrained belief that he just has to suck it up and deal with it. What I would recommend is when he does open up and share with you those feelings of overwhelm, to do whatever you can to just be a very patient listener. And hopefully it's a time like now, as you've described, that you're doing well and that you're at the acceptance point, even with the troubles walking and those kinds of things. Is be there for him when he's ready to talk. And, you know, we very frequently discuss this type of thing when we get into couples workshop, and there's a reason I'm bringing that up. If there is any opportunity through your chapter to find a way to go to a couples weekend, if there is a way, whether it has to do with MS or not, that the two of you can get together and attend a workshop, whether it's through your community, through, you know, your place of worship or whatever, those are just tremendous opportunities where you don't have to be the one who's pressuring him, saying, how are you feeling, how are you doing? You can have people who have, you know, those professional skills to ask the kinds of questions that will get you talking about it. And, you know, I can't emphasize enough the importance of of really recognizing that every individual is going to deal with this differently. The best I can say is see if you can find an opportunity that would allow him to open up through some type of workshop. And it might not be his thing, but people have tried those kinds of things and found it's one of the best decisions they ever made to begin to talk about it. I think it's very useful, very helpful. The times I've done those kinds of workshops, when the guys do open up, and I think that's one advantage I have, that guys recognize that they're talking to another man, and they can, begin to share some of their frustrations. And, there's so much in what you talked about. There's guilt feelings you have that maybe you're taking advantage of them. I mean, obviously you want to find somebody you can talk to about that. Hopefully you can share it with your husband, and maybe there are more things that you can do. But asking him directly that question, I think, is one way to go. But the overall, dealing with his feelings of overwhelm might take a little bit more time for him to begin to open up. That's why I recommend the workshop or talking to someone who, has some type of skill with that. So I hope that helps, Karen.
Our next question comes from Charles. Charles, go ahead. Charles, you may ask your question. Our next question comes from Kenna. Kenna, go ahead.
Yes. I was wondering what was the name of the book that you told us about at the end of your presentation. You said it came out maybe late 2009, early 2010. And also, who is the author of that book?
Okay. The name of the book is Switch. I'll spell that S as in Sam, W-I-T as in Tom, C as in Charlie, H, and there's a subtitle. I believe the subtitle is How to Change When Change is Hard. And the author's last name, it's two brothers. The author's last name is spelled Heath, H as in Howard, E as in Edward, A as in Apple, T as in Tom, H. So that's Heath. First names are Chip, C-H-I-P, and Dan Heath. And I know if you have access to the Internet and you put in the word switch on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, not that I want to be a commercial for anyone, you'll probably find it fairly quickly. Don't know whether it'll be in public libraries yet because it is a pretty new book, but I think even if you had an opportunity to stop by your local bookstore, the bigger chains anyway would probably have that book.
Our next question comes from London. London, go ahead.
I was actually wondering, I guess it's a two-part question. I was wondering, how long does it take to actually adapt to the new, new life after being diagnosed with the MS? And how do you deal with legal trouble as far as, getting in trouble with the law?
Okay. Well, the second part, unfortunately, I don't have expertise in it at all, so I don't want to sidestep your question. Maybe if there is another aspect to it that you might be able to share with me, if you're comfortable, I might be able to help with it. But adapting to the new life after being diagnosed, that question is one that the best I can share with you, London, is that it's going to vary by person. Let me tell you some of the things it'll depend on. And I believe you asked a question earlier, which may have an impact on this, the amount of support you have for dealing with MS, for getting assistance when you need it, when the symptoms are most strong, that's going to make an impact on how long it takes to begin to adapt to MS. Another variable that will impact how long it takes to adapt is how quickly you can come to terms with the emotions, whether you're able to find a medication that helps you deal to some extent with the symptoms that you face with MS. Again, if you were the person who asked the question earlier, I think you said you had some difficulty walking. If you can find some ways to help either with fatigue when you're getting tired of walking, or if there are any aids that you can use to make it easier to walk, particularly when you're tired, might not need it all the time. But a friend of mine who has MS uses his cane when he feels tired or when he is having particular difficulty walking. So it's hard for me to say it will take you this many months to come to, accept MS. It really depends on so many different things, including, the type of MS you have, either relapsing, remitting, or progressive. And I apologize, I don't recall from your earlier question whether you shared what type of MS you're dealing with. So, again, I hope that helps. If not, I would recommend that you touch base with somebody at the local chapter, and they can help. And the second part of your question, I do apologize, I'm not really expert enough to help you with that part of it. Operator, any other questions in queue?
At this time, there are no further questions.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say thank you to everyone, and just ask either you or Jackie if there are any closing comments. Okay, thank you very much, everyone, and have a good evening. And again, I enjoyed it. Take care. Bye.